Welcome to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire. I'm Dr. Paul, your host. Today's show features an interview I had with Shane Riley. He is an expert on EMF. What is it? What is the bioinitiative? What extent of research is out there? We're talking thousands of articles. The specific vulnerability of children to EMF. We talk about 5G. And then most importantly, don't miss towards the end of the interview, he discusses what can we do to protect ourselves and our children. I then have a great interview with Suzanne Gallagher. She's the director of Parents' Rights in Education. And their website, parentsrightsined.org, is filled with information that will help you if you are a parent and you're worried about what's going on in your child's school. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul, coming to you from the heart. I have to tell you this week, folks, recovering from COVID and now walking through a storm on the Oregon coast. The ocean's behind me. I can't see it. It's not far. You can probably hear it. But I have to tell you, there is something very special about recognizing the importance of the storm and going through the storm that might be a part of perhaps what you're also experiencing. I think collectively we have all experienced an incredible storm with COVID-19 and the response to it that our government agencies and public health officials, et cetera, have put upon us. But we've joined together here at Against the Wind and been able to share a different narrative. And now on a personal level, I just wanted to share from my heart that my own personal storm that's been a result of this time, this last 2-3 years, while on the surface appearing to be horrendous, has been the biggest gift of my life. I hope you too can find a gift in whatever storm you might be experiencing. I come to you with love. So much love has been freely shared with me, and I come to you in gratitude for so many of you who have actually extended love to me. Love, support, encouragement, guidance, blessings. Thank you. And I wish upon you love and blessings, courage to persist, hang in there, and endure if it's hard, because there is a rainbow on the other end, and the lessons we can learn individually and collectively are what's going to make everything worth it. I'm Dr. Paul. Welcome, Shane Riley. Man, I loved hearing your information when we met at a presentation you were giving at a little restaurant in Oregon City, I think it was, some months ago. You are the owner of Optimal Dwelling Spaces. You're the president of 5G Free Oregon. Man, that sounds huge. You have an amazing website, optimaldwellingspaces.com, and you really specialize in electromagnetic pollution, inspection, remediation, and consultation. This is a whole field that I know is important, but I don't think very many of us are aware of the magnitude of what this really is and what it means. So thank you for being on Against the Wind. It's really an honor to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Dr. Thomas. And likewise, in Oregon City at that event, your presentation and the data and the slides you had prepared were really amazing, really eye-opening. So I enjoyed your presentation.
Oh, thank you. So just to kick this off, this is such a new area for me. Explain to our audience, first of all, you know, how you got to where you are as far as your background, and why on earth did you decide to become a building biologist?
Yeah, that's kind of a big one. I think a great way to do that is to just share this image. And this is really the why for me. Once upon a time, I actually worked as a firefighter, and you can see that in the bottom right. And it was just amazing, an amazing world to be a part of. But shortly into it, I got really basically worn out emotionally, physically, mentally. It was not good for me. It's a very demanding job, as you probably know. And, you know, being up all night can catch up with the best of us. What was perplexing for me was we were working out all the time. Nutrition, paleo was just kind of coming online. So we were really into that. I was young, and yet I was breaking down physically and emotionally and mentally, like I said, and having a really tough time of it. So it wasn't making sense to me. And eventually I had to walk away from it, which was really, really a tough decision for me and my family. When I did, I got better. And I started actually hearing a little bit more about this EMF business. And I listened to some podcasts and kind of started falling down the rabbit hole of electromagnetic fields. And then just not even 3-4 years later, my mother, who's in the middle, contracted a very aggressive form of brain cancer, glioblastoma. Mm-hmm. And from time of her diagnosis to passing was about 8 months. So it happened so fast. And as the dust was settling, I knew a little bit more about EMF and how it played in with health at that point. And when my head cleared, I could kind of think about how my mom used technology, cell phone up to her head all the time, very social person, you know, knew everybody in town, sleeping with an iPad under her pillow and power lines outside of her second story townhome window. And some more pieces clicked for me about how EMF related. And I believe it's a significant factor in her contracting that brain tumor and being taken so soon. And then the next piece here are my two daughters. And as they entered the public school system, I became really, really, really deeply concerned about the amount of tech and the wireless that goes with it they were being exposed to day in and day out. So all of that coalesced for me into wanting to help people avoid some of the hardship that I had experienced. And I said, there's got to be a way to be certified and to do this. Google search brought up this place called the Building Biology Institute, which came over from Germany in the 80s. And it really is a discipline that focuses on the natural world and the built world. So and the ways that we've become disconnected with our homes and all the nice technologies and conveniences inside them, the way those have disconnected us from the natural world and from optimal true health. So we work with real estate professionals, contractors, builders, homeowners, practitioners such as yourself to sort of raise that awareness and to show ways to make your home a little bit healthier.
So you're very much self-taught, it sounds like. There wasn't a university for EMF.
Yeah, it's really in its infant stages. There is an institute and some dozens of people go through the training every year. But yeah, a lot of this is new and is figuring it out on your own in the field. And so I've been doing that since about 2017, working with clients inside their homes to identify how much EMF they have, where it's coming from, and then what they can do to lower that.
Wow. Well, that's awesome. Let's start it off then, because EMF is a term, I think it's electromagnetic frequencies, right? But what does that mean? Maybe you can help us out with kind of understanding the range of things that fall into what we call EMF.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a topic, when I show this, you might recall from physics in junior high or high school. But an EMF is just, if you boil it down, is the way energy gets from point A to point B in the universe. And there's a number of ways it does that as far as the frequency and the amplitude and other components. But this is kind of a chart, a graphical representation of how we understand it today. And you can see some common items that you might have in your home or you might know about, from all the way on the low end to like an AM radio wavelength, all the way up into cosmic, you know, nuclear gamma rays radiation and everything in between. So that's really what we're talking about, is energy going from point A to point B.
Very interesting. So I'm curious, I mean, that's a huge range of wavelengths. And I mean, I saw that rainbow in the middle, visible light. The rest of it's invisible to us. And I mean, I hear about, like, certainly I read a lot about 5G and you're very involved with that. But how are these things affecting health? Should we be worried even?
We absolutely should. And it is tricky. Like you said, you can't see these things. You can't taste them. you can't touch them. But the researchers and the scientists have been looking at this since the middle of the last century, actually. Back in the 60s and 70s, NASA actually caught wind of a document and translated it from Russia from the 1930s, where they had looked at a variety of these EMFs and how they interacted with humans and animals. And you can see on the screen, there's a lot to read here, but essentially they found effects and impacts across a huge variety of body systems, different levels of radiation, low, high. And they just documented hundreds and hundreds of effects from this type of radiation. And, you know, even more recently, that research has continued. A very good resource if you're having that same question that you asked me, did these affect you? Or maybe you're a little skeptical, or you know a skeptic, or you just want to read up. Back in the 2007, this report called Bioinitiative came out. 29 PhDs, researchers, doctors got together and said, hey, we've seen enough. There's enough research out here that we should be doing some things to protect people and to raise awareness. And so they compiled thousands of studies. And there's some really nice color-coded charts, as you can see here on the screen, that show a variety of effects at different radiation levels. And you might be surprised to know that most of these levels that they found effects are significantly underneath the government's exposure safety guidelines at this point. So yes, we should absolutely be concerned. Even more recently, there's a prestigious research program in the US called the National Toxicology Program. And they took a look at this and they spent $30 million over 14 years. They were actually looking at older generations of cell phones. You remember 2G and 3G when didn't have all the apps and the fancy things. So, you know, lower capability, lower horsepower in the phone, if you will, and the network. So overall, lower radiation. And they found clear evidence of certain cancer types and heart damage and DNA damage in the study rats that they used. So very concerning there. And the same type of tumors that they found in this study were also found in some studies that looked at long-term or 10 years or more cell phone users. So definitely reason to be concerned here.
My sense is that as the cell phone technology has become more and more advanced, you know, when you go from, like you pointed out, 2G to 3G, and we're coming up on 5G here, each evolution, is it worse for us? Is it a more powerful environmental toxin?
Most definitely. Yeah. All of it's a horsepower race, right? And when a new generation comes out, you know, 3G into 4G, a lot more power going into it. Plus, 3G is still around for some time. It doesn't go away right away. Same thing's going to happen with 5G and the 4G or LTE that we have now. 5G is going to be additional and built on top of it. So it's just adding more.
So the 3G, 4G doesn't go away. They just add another technology.
It takes some time. 3G is pretty much all phased out now. But, okay, you know, we're going to have 4G with the developing 5G for, you know, a decade or more. And then, wow, you know, even when 4G is phased out, there will be a 6G on top of 5G. So yeah, the amount of precaution here is really nil.
Wow. While we're on that, I've read something and I just don't know what to make of it. I wonder if you've heard about this satellite sort of some kind of way of getting your cell phone connected through satellite. So it'll just blanket a city, for example. Mm-hmm. Have you read about that? Is that like the next level?
It's kind of a 1A, 1B with this fifth generation evolution. Okay. There's a number of companies, including Tesla and SpaceX, who are putting these, it's called Starlink, putting this mesh network of satellites up with the goal of covering essentially every square inch of the globe with a wireless signal that you could then connect to. And there's a number of other companies, but at this point there's, you know, some tens of thousands of satellites up there for this purpose.
Interesting. So I'm a pediatrician, And so I take care of little people. And yeah. I know in medicine, kids are not just miniature adults. I mean, when you have take the womb, when you got mom's pregnant and you've got a developing baby, there's so many other variables and they're so much more vulnerable. I think you've got cell division going on. You've got little brains, developing brains, networks are being established. I imagine we have to be concerned with EMFs and brain development. What are you finding there?
Definitely. Yeah. You really said it, that kids are not little adults. There's some key differences in the way that these EMFs interact with them. You know, there's some quotes here. I'll just read the one at the bottom, but this is from the American Academy of Pediatrics. And they said, it is essential any new standard for cell phones or other wireless devices be based on protecting the youngest and most vulnerable populations to ensure they are safeguarded throughout their lifetimes. And that's children in this case. And, you know, why is that? If we look at this graph, the skulls of children are thicker and the relative proportion of their head to the rest of their body is different from an adult. And that all adds into more susceptibility, more exposure of radiation, for example, from a cell phone. And also, you know, their brains are not myelinated until mid-20s, from what I understand. So that insulation around the wiring in the brain is not there to protect from this. And what's even more concerning in my mind is this concept of a lifetime of exposure. You know, when you were born, when I was born, we didn't grow into a world with 5G and a home with 15 to 20 connected wireless devices. You know, technology was so much different 30, 40, 50 years ago. So these kids are having longer exposure times, longer and more chances for the programming in their DNA and their RNA to start having these errors that accumulate over time. And we know that that's kind of the foundation of tumors and cancerous processes. So big concern here, you know, especially when you start thinking about schools the kids spend so much time in. They're really, really susceptible to these EMFs, and their overall time of exposure is just through the roof. And it's really concerning.
In my career, it's always about trying to first do no harm, right? I mean, that's an oath that doctors are supposed to live by, even though the formal swearing of that oath was long gone, I think, decades ago. But we're supposed to model that in anything we do. Here's something I just struggle with. So I'm in a world where I've become aware that vaccines are a massive toxin because you're bypassing the natural barrier by injecting through the skin. Pathogens or whatever you will, antigens, don't go through the mucosal surfaces where they interact properly with the immune system. We know our environment's loaded with pesticides. We've got glyphosate, so disruptive to so many things. We've got the plastics and the endocrine disruptors. And now we've got this darn EMF. It's like, how do we put it all together? How important is this? And is our government doing anything to protect us?
So the government is really turning a blind eye to this. And there's some of the usual suspects are behind that, you know, money and lobbying from the companies that make these products. But here's a chart about exposure limits for wireless type of radiation. And we're at the top of the heap, but not in a good way in the US. We're really way beyond, significantly beyond what most other countries allow for their citizens. So this tells you something.
Sorry to interrupt you. I'm seeing a term there, power flux density. Can you explain that a little bit?
That's a fancy term for the intensity of the radiation, the strength of the radiation, and how much we allow. So
this graph is shocking. I mean, US, Japan, ICNIRP is what?
That's ICNIRP, which is an international body for regulating this type of radiation.
Got you. And then Canada. And then you just look at the difference between, you know, these top ones compared to the rest. I mean, it's magnitudes.
part of the problem is the agency that's supposed to be regulating these companies that produce products that use this type of energy, it essentially has a revolving door. So there's a great book here, Captured Agency by Norm Alster, which highlights a lot of these inconsistencies, how people go from the FCC to the telecoms and back and vice versa. And
that's sounds just like our FDA and CDC with pharma and vaccines. And
absolutely. Yeah. They really, I mean, there's like one playbook here and yeah. they're all using it.
Capture the agencies that regulate you, pay them well so that yeah. they won't regulate you. And, it's a mess.
Other things like buying science. There's just a lot of things we've seen before with government protection from this. And I really wanted to point this out because it hits a little closer to home here in Oregon. But Senate Bill 283 from a few years back tasked the OHA, the Oregon Health Authority, to review the available research on wireless, particularly as it related to schools, to see, you know, are we harming our kids with all this wireless in schools? And the OHA produced essentially a sham of a report, not up to scientific snuff, wouldn't pass muster, you know, in a peer review type process. Widely criticized on an international basis. And this is a great article here, this screenshot. I encourage anybody who wants to know a little bit more about this continuing situation in Oregon from the Washington Spectator. But essentially, the OHA went to a hearing and was basically pointed out that they didn't have the resources to actually do this report correctly. They broke a number of rules from the law. And the end result at this point is that the bill still stands saying, no, wireless is of no concern in the schools. And the problem here is that other states are going to look at this, other decision makers across the country are going to look at this report because it was really groundbreaking in a way. Not a lot of other places have done this. So one of the things I'm working on with the nonprofit that I work for is to raise awareness about this and try and push to get this retracted and done right. Because if they did it right and they actually reviewed all the science and they stayed away from the industry funded bits, it would paint a much different picture. There's essentially four main categories of EMF that we see in a modern home, and artificial lighting is first. That was that tiny little sliver on the electromagnetic spectrum from earlier. But light is such a powerful biological signal to us. And the type of lighting we have, it really doesn't match the sun. It's so different from the sun. And so that's
and a which is one. Better if you had I know there's different types of lighting. What's safer?
Yeah, nothing replaces sunlight. So you have to, you know, work that into your day to get out and actually see the sun at different times of the day and see the natural light. But the best of the worst essentially is the good old fashioned incandescent, which you can still get. You can't walk into Ace Hardware necessarily and get one, but you can still get them. They're much, much safer in terms of EMF than LED or fluorescent. So yeah, that's the first main type of EMF. The second, and this is really the big one, gets a lot of the attention, but it's the radio frequency or the microwaves or wireless. Anything that sends and receives a signal wirelessly. So your cell phone, your Bluetooth, AirPod headphones, you know, the Wi-Fi system in your home, on your laptop. There's many others. The average home has 15 to 20 of these devices using some type of this wireless energy. So this is a huge one. And I want to touch on 5G here in a second, because that's really important too. But the other two that kind of get swept under the rug and are a little less known, they have to do with the power delivery into your home, right? That's energy going from one place to another in the universe. So that is an EMF, and our homes consume power, wiring in the walls, the appliances, the blender, the hairdryer, the light bulbs. And as a result of that energy consumption, there are just natural byproducts kind of electromagnetic waste that come out into the room. And that's really what we're concerned about in homes, is how do we use this technology a little bit more intelligently, a little more differently, to reduce the burden and to reduce the presence of this artificial energy. And there are many ways to do that. But the wireless part of this gets so much of the talk, but I just want people to know there's actually four main types. And so if you're kind of focusing in on just the wireless part, you're really missing the broader picture. So let me just touch on 5G.
And that'd be the elephant in the room, it looks like.
It is the elephant in the room. And if you believe the hype, you know, you're going to think it's the greatest thing that's ever come to civilization. I put this slide together to show just how much concern and just how much downside there is to it. As I said earlier, it's additional frequencies, additional radiation on top of what we already have in the skies these days. And they're deploying that radiation in new different ways. Things like phased arrays and beam forming, where, you know, you can think of that scene from Star Wars where the Death Star is powering up and the little beams focus in, and then the beam shoots out, the main concentrated beam. It's a lot like that, where with 4G, it's just sort of the antennas are emitting in a wide swath all day around the clock. 5G is very intelligent precision, and it focuses a beam. So if you have a 5G device and you're walking down the street, you're going to get a lot of attention from these new antenna arrays. And even if you don't have one, if you're sitting at the cafe and you're in between someone with the 5G device, let's say, in their pocket and a 5G antenna, you know, that beam is going to come at you and through you, a very focused, coherent beam of radiation. So very concerning. We don't know how that's going to affect a cell, an organism, a human, an animal, a bee. We don't know. Yeah,
wow.
We haven't added this all together into some kind of experiment yet. So very concerning. And there's really no precaution here.
Wow. So you just brought something to my mind. I didn't realize this, just how ignorant I am on this technology. So I have a phone that's a couple, 2, 3, 4 years old. I'm pretty sure it's a 4G phone. I don't think I have 5G. Because I've had friends who've upgraded to a 5G phone, and they have different problems with connectivity than I do. What you said was, if I'm walking down the street with a 5G phone, I'm attracting this energy.
Yeah, that is a nuance here between 4G and the LTE and the 5G, whereas LTE is just shooting. It's kind of like a shotgun, just spraying out everywhere around the clock. Whereas 5G is much more surgical in its precision, much more focused. It's only looking for devices that can take its signal.
Huh. So let's delve into I know that you wanted to end the presentation with how we can lower our EMF exposure, protect our families. Tell us what our options are here.
Yeah, I've got a couple here that I think are really useful to get started on, are good bang for the buck items. The first one, this might surprise some people, but there's actually natural, healthy, good EMFs. And this picture shows some of them, right? And we probably know about all these things, but if we're not working them into our daily routine, we are not able to offset this artificial EMF that's so prevalent these days all around us. So getting outside, getting natural full spectrum sunlight on your skin, in your eyes, touching the earth, connecting to water, which is a very powerful grounding and shielding mechanism. Being with other humans, right? This is a picture of my partner and my daughter on the beach in Mexico, and just interacting with that human to human energy. This is such a powerful one for protecting yourself and offsetting the effect of artificial EMF. Number two, this is called the inverse square law. And this can really inform us when we're trying to lower our exposure from EMF. because the intensity of radiation falls off on an exponential basis as you move away from the source of radiation. So even a little distance away drops the amount of radiation that's hitting your body significantly. So, you know, moving your monitor on your desktop a foot back can really lower some of your EMF exposure, or putting the Wi-Fi router in a different room of the house, or moving your bed off the wall that has the electrical panel on the other side. Just a little distance can make a huge drop in your personal exposure.
Interesting. So practically speaking, I'm thinking so many of us sleep with our cell phones nearby because we want to be able to just grab it. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, what do you think of these Alexas and smart devices that they listen to you and then they answer whatever question you want? I've been to homes where they have them all over the house.
Yeah. Those are really concerning, privacy number one, but they're part of this ecosystem of wireless radiation. And part of this, and you'll see it on a subsequent slide, is to try and eliminate as many of those wireless points as you can. If you're a person, let's say you're on call or something, or you have to be by your phone, you know, if you can get it from your bedside table to your master bath, you know, 10, 12 feet away, whatever it might be, that's a significant drop in your exposure. And you can probably still hear the sound of the phone if it rings to get it. So yeah, little things like that can make a very big difference.
Interesting. So this takes me back. I just wanted to highlight for our listeners, because you made that comment, there's this lifetime exposure in our kids today. You know, I'm old enough that I grew up in a village in Africa with no electricity, no running water. The only exposure I had was sunshine, and we had lanterns and fireplace, and I mean, that very little exposure to move to now where screen time is everywhere, right? I mean, kids in school nowadays, especially with COVID hitting the last couple of years, everything became even more intense. We have no idea what we're doing to people, do we?
We really don't. And we're going to find out the hard way in some 10, 15, 20 years, you know, and we're already seeing some of that in some of the epidemiological studies and long-term studies on exposures. So it's a big concern. If you want to do anything to improve your home health and lower EMF, it really should start with wireless. And the minimum starting point there is to put things on power strips, put things on timers that emit wireless, like your Wi-Fi router, your TV, your Alexa smart devices, whatever it might be. And they should all go off at night. You don't need them. And it's just essentially cooking your body in microwave radiation. The gold standard, and what I work with a lot of my clients on, is to transition to that corded Ethernet network system that, you know, that was the only way you could connect some years ago. But it's a great way to do it. It's actually really simple. It's plug and play with a few different components, and you get some adapters for your devices, and they work terrific. And it's much, much faster actually than Wi-Fi. So moving to Ethernet is one of the best things you can do regarding wireless and microwave radiation. Don't be that early adopter of new gadgets. You know, these things, like we talked about, the horsepower is just ever increasing on them. So you would be wise to just pump the brakes a little bit and don't get that 5G phone. Buy a new to you 4G phone, you know, and keep that as long as you can. Actually, when you use your cell phone, do it on speakerphone, or get some air tube headsets that have a section of plastic tubing right here that keep that signal, that radiation, away from your brain. Mm-hmm. Wireless is such a huge one. And then, you know, a lot of people don't understand airplane mode. They don't understand that their phone has multiple antennas on it. And your phone can actually show you the airplane icon, but your Wi-Fi antenna could still be on. So this is a screen I put up. I put it out on social media and other places, but just to help people understand, how do you truly get your phone into airplane mode, because that's important. We're carrying these things around with us, and you want to really control as much of the time you're being exposed to radiation as you can. So airplane mode, sleeping. This is so huge. This is an image from a reading I took on a client on their daughter's bed. And I think she was 8 or 9 years old, but been having a lot of behavioral issues in school. And as you can see, the color-coded chart on the right, the magnetic field exposure on her bed was off the charts.
What's a healthy level? Those numbers don't mean anything to me.
Yeah, so down, you know, it's 0.2 or less down in the green there.
Gotcha.
Is what you want to be. So essentially, this was just way out of bounds. And it was coming from a circuit from a baseboard heater in their home. And so when we disabled that circuit at night, this field went away. The child started sleeping better, improved behavior in school. And it's such an easy thing, flipping a circuit off at night. So creating that sleep sanctuary, the lighting you see after the sun goes down should not be a bright blue tech screen. You know, you should use light filtering software on your laptop and your phone. Maybe get some blue blocking glasses. Maybe use more candles or more red or orange bulbs, which don't have that blue daytime component in them. And then also, you know, tech and social media, very invigorating and not in the best way. So looking at your social media right before bed is not gonna condone itself to really quality sleep. So wireless and sleep are two huge ones. And then the final thing you can think about to really get to the root of the problem, to really fast forward, there's a lot of information, a lot of noise on the internet about EMF, is to go with some professional services, either remote consulting or having someone like me come into your home to identify all the types of EMF and the levels and then build a custom plan. Here's what you need to do in this room. You need an electrician in this room, et cetera, to really help you march down that list to improve the health of your home, the health of your family, and to go from there. So,
and this is what you do, right?
That is what I do. Yeah, that's one of my favorite things about my work, is actually going into someone's home, hearing what's going on for them, and then uncovering all of the EMF, which is one very important piece of the health puzzle. You know, everybody's a complicated equation, so many different variables. But I do believe, and I've seen it, I've experienced it, that the EMF puzzle piece is very important to pay attention to.
So I'm seeing in your image here some gadgets. Mm-hmm. These would be the things, I'm guessing, if you're here in Oregon, so I could have you come into my home or my place of business. You're going to use your gadgets to figure things out, make some recommendations. But how does one help someone remotely?
Yeah, there are a number of things I've done, from just putting out information on social media, tips, short videos on YouTube, things you should be aware of in a neighborhood or in a home, ebooks on how to understand and detect EMFs. And we can actually do like a focus in on one area of the home remotely. And the client fills out a questionnaire beforehand. And then we look at the room on Zoom, just like we're doing now. And we can go around and I can tell them some things to improve upon to make that exposure lower in that area.
Interesting. And are any of the devices you use to detect EMFs, are any of them affordable enough for people to do this on their own, maybe with your guidance remotely?
The devices I use are really high end, so no, they're not. There are some very good consumer level meters out there that I recommend to people that can allow them to, you know, if you're in your home trying to improve your office, or if you're traveling, if you check into an Airbnb, for example, and you want to know what's going on in there, or you wonder why you slept terribly in the Airbnb that night, you know, you can scan the bed and see what's going on and make some changes. So yeah, there's very good tools for professionals and for consumers.
So Shane, this is fascinating. I I like to be practical. So as a pediatrician, for example, and I've gone into integrative and holistic sort of approaches, sometimes the list of things we might ask people to do to have optimal wellness, it's overwhelming. Like either cost-wise, it's overwhelming, or it's just too many things to do. If you were to prioritize, let's just say I'm coming to you, but I don't have a lot of money, but I am really concerned about this issue. Could you prioritize for me and for our viewers, maybe what are the most important things we should do? Absolutely, if possible, do these things.
Yeah, there's three that come to mind. The first is going to be to eliminate wireless as much as possible in your home. And the second is going to be to get outside with the natural light and connection to the earth. And then the third is going to be to watch the artificial light that you get. So the screens and the bulbs, especially after sunset. So, you know, that can, if you're seeing bulbs that tell your brain it's solar noon, it's going to impact your sleep, how fast you can fall asleep, your sleep quality. So then to counter that, you block the bad light inside, you get outside during the day and you tune into what the sun's doing. And that really helps your circadian timing and your circadian rhythm. So if you do those three things, I guess two of them are kind of around light, but the wireless piece and lighting is extremely impactful. And switching to Ethernet is not terribly expensive, and it's not very hard to get outside. So that's pretty economical too.
Yeah, I understand the importance of good sleep. It's restorative for health and so much more. What about this? I'll just play devil's advocate. Shane, I sleep fine. I don't see why I need to change my screen exposure and where my cell phone's at. I fall asleep pretty well, and I'm old enough I have to get up and use the bathroom once or twice, but beyond that, I sleep pretty good. How are your suggestions going to make my life any better?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I do get that from time to time. I like to relay the anecdote about the frog in the boiling pot of water with this. You know, you get used to a certain status quo, a certain environmental condition around you. So you might just be used to a certain level and a certain quality of sleep. And you've forgotten about, you know, how much on the top could I improve here? I think that's very, very applicable to EMF and to sleep. So, yeah,
that's a good point for folks who remember camping. There's something about the sleep you get when you're on the ground in a tent. It was special. I remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another good one too.
Yeah. So, final thoughts, just share with my audience, share with the world. What's burning on your heart?
Yeah, this EMF issue is the cigarette of the digital age. I really think that's going to coalesce and become concrete in a decade or two. There's going to be a price to pay, and I want as many people to be aware of the impact of EMF and to start making changes now in their life. And there's a lot of really low-hanging fruit that anybody can take action on. I'm a terrific resource with questions and how to do that. There is some good information on the internet, but I just want to really encourage people to look into this issue. It can feel a little overwhelming, but myself and other colleagues, other building biologists, have done a lot of work to try and make it simple, make it accessible, and to help you on that journey to optimal health. So please don't ignore EMF. Please really tune in, do some reading, do some due diligence, ask some questions, and kind of go down that path to change what's going on in your home and to really impact all the people that are in it in a positive way.
Fantastic. I know you have a website, optimaldwellingspaces.com. Is there any other way that people can get a hold of you?
That's a great one. They can search that same name on social media as well. I'm on the usual suspects there. So Very good. I'd love to hear from people, and I'm happy to answer questions and be a resource in any way I can.
Fantastic. God bless, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Dr. Thomas.
Welcome, Suzanne Gallagher, to Against the Wind, Doctors in Science Under Fire.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
Looking at the background behind you, that answers one of the questions I had. You are the director of Parents' Rights in Education. I know you have an event coming up in Oregon this coming week.
Yeah.
Tell us how you got started and what's going on with
Parents' Rights. Okay. Well, Lori Porter, this teacher, she contacted me and she said, I'm just going to start an organization. Would you come to a meeting? We're going to be talking about, you know, how to set it up, et cetera. And so I went to the meeting. And they were talking about names. Usually that's the first thing you do. Like, what are we going to call it? And they had some names that they were suggesting. And I said, oh, can't call it that. Can't use the name Oregon. That's going to limit you. You don't know what's going to happen. And you need to name it for the issue. Not concerned, you know, citizens for good schools or something like that. Has to be serious because we're talking about the law here, right? That's what we're protecting is our individual freedom based on the law. I said, you have to name it Parents' Rights in Education because everybody else was claiming their rights, actually rights that they don't even have. And yet we do have natural rights as parents. And the Supreme Court has upheld those rights in relation to the school system, that parents do have the right to direct the education of their children. So I said, that's what you got to call it, because that is the mission and it is the issue. Later, when Lori wasn't able to continue running the organization, they asked me if I would take over. So that was just about 5 years ago. And since then, it grew to what you see behind me. Why? Because of the name of our organization. It's about their rights. And we have certainly more than parents in our organization. We have a lot of concerned citizens, grandparents, just people, teachers, ex-teachers who care about this system that is under attack. And it comes down to the rights that parents are losing. So that's the story.
That's the background.
And here I am. And here are all these states. And wow, it's exciting. They're waking up.
So I looked at your website briefly before we got on together. And I know some of the issues you're dealing with have to do with student health. I know, you know, I'm a pediatrician and I've been fighting for medical freedom and informed consent. And where we intersect one another, I think interlap and what we're trying to do here is, you know, parents should have the right to determine what happens to their children when it comes to health, and obviously all these other educational areas that we can cover. And the vaccine issue has been the way that the system has sort of gotten around parent authority by mandating vaccines for you to go to school. Mm-hmm. And even though we're in Oregon, you and I, and we have the ability in Oregon, parents can just go watch a video and sign their exemption, and they don't have to go to these great lengths of getting all these vaccines, but the schools don't tell parents this. They just line these kids up, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't, you know, they don't make a big effort to tell the parents what their rights are.
Right.
Because there's an agenda within the public school system. There are things that they want you to do, and they believe that students can make up their minds, you know, about their gender identity when they're in kindergarten. This is very traumatizing. And I know as a pediatrician, you're concerned not only about the physical health of these young kids, but their mental health. And a lot of what they're doing, I believe, and they is under the banner of mental health, a lot of the things that are happening in the public school. And that is a huge concern of our organization. Because basically they're talking behind the parents' backs, telling students, minor children, other people's minor children, talking to them about things that have nothing to do with academics. And the parents should be part of the discussion. They should know what their kids are discussing with another adult.
Sure. Yeah. Sex education, gender identity education, a lot of things that are now being done in the schools used to be something parents would do at home, right? And you would send your kid to school for education more in the terms of, you know, academics and obviously to have healthy social interaction, although that now seems to be an oxymoron in the school system for a lot of things.
Yeah.
I know for parents, for example, when the laws are such that you are being mandated to do something, or the school system curriculum is such that it's exposing your kids to things perhaps that you may not be comfortable with, one option is homeschooling. Is that an area that your organization...
Oh. Yeah, thank you for allowing me to address that. We do support choice because we're about parents' rights. So parents should have the right to choose whatever education they want for their child. Part of that may be within the public school system about what you want your child to taught or not. They've lost a lot of ground in the public schools. As I mentioned earlier, I got involved in the early 90s, in 1990. That was the year when school choice was first put on the ballot. There was an initiative, and unfortunately, it was voted down. We wouldn't be talking about any of this probably if it had passed. But at that time, the situation within the walls of the schools was not nearly as dire as it is now. And so to a degree, all of these things that have happened since then to catapult us into this situation we're in maybe has been a good thing. Because in 1990, I said, okay, I've been doing this for 6 years. I'm going to start my business. I'm done. I'm worn out. You know, this activist, you know, trying to make a difference. Nobody believed me. Now, oh yeah, they believe it. And then some. So sometimes, you know, it's got to get worse before it gets better. Just like, you know, marital counseling, you know, you know, you look into it, it's like, oh my gosh. And we have a tab on our site about homeschooling. In fact, we're concerned that homeschoolers, and listen, they know it. I know a lot of people who homeschool, and they're concerned that regulations will begin to encroach from the state into what they're doing at that homeschooling level, and pretty soon they won't be able to do it. They'll be requiring them to have master's degrees or crazy things like that, you know, for a six-year-old. Teaching a six-year-old, you have to have a master's. that would destroy homeschooling, so right. We don't want that.
So, you know, as I think back historically, I'm remembering that education in the very beginning was about getting subsistence farmers' kids trained for industry. And then it has morphed into something rather quickly, it feels like, in the last decade or two. It's a whole different sort of programming, it feels like. What's driving this, and what do you want parents to know?
Well, okay, so on our website, we had a great summit last year, and there all of those speeches are on the website, so people can watch those from last year. And among them is a presentation by our leader in Texas, and she talks about the money. How is the money being funneled into the local school districts, and why don't we have any local control? Because there are outside interests that have an agenda, and they are controlling literally from, you know, a national level. In fact, they're even working in coalition with state legislators, leaders, you know, governments, departments of education to pass laws at the state level. Talk about mandates. Mandating certain things be taught. And as a result, that's why we see a lot of programs that have nothing to do with academics. They're all about changing what people think.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I had on my show, I interviewed someone who had been following the money with regards to the masking of our children in the schools. Mm-hmm. And these massive amount of incentive dollars that were going to each local school in Oregon in our situation,
yeah,
if they would enforce the masking policies. Otherwise, yes, they've lost I mean, the amount of money was obscene. I mean,
yes,
it was like beyond their total budget that they would ever have imagined. So
it's kind of like blackmail money, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you and I have become aware of these things. I mean, you're way ahead of my understanding of what's going on in the schools. What do you suggest the listener here who's a parent, perhaps they're not really aware of the extent to which things have become what they are. This happens so quickly. Right. What should parents do?
So I encourage anyone to take a look at this before they put their kids into school. Okay, number one. And the easiest way to do that, well, right now, is to come to our event. Spend a day. They're not going to get everything. You know, we can't cover it all in one day. It's unbelievable. But visit our website. Just under the main banner, there is an icon. Our summit is coming up. It's on Saturday, the 6th of August. Come and listen. And that's a great way to get an introduction. Sometimes we just need to be sat down and, you know, have to pay attention.
Your event is here in Oregon. Is there an option for people to attend virtually?
No, we need them to be there. But afterward, we are going to video record all of the speakers, and we'll make that available on our website. So we usually do that.
Fantastic.
They can watch the videos from last year. Get started with that. They're right there. Watch them with some other parents. It's a great, you know, it's a great way to learn. And I also do a podcast. I'm just ready to launch one for tomorrow. And it's great for parents. It's great for me because you don't have to, you can be doing several things at once, which most people do nowadays anyway. And that will give you an overview. So we touch on, gosh, I've done almost 150 podcasts now on all these different subjects, and they're not more than 20 minutes long.
Fantastic. And your podcasts are available at parentsrightsined.org.
Yep. You can just click on the link and then, or listen to it on, let's see, I think it's on Apple and Spotify and, you know, the main platforms for podcasts.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, this is just so important that you were able to get on the show here. And parents, please, just as I've been trying to bring you information about health, freedom, and informed consent,
right,
become informed about what's going on in your kids' schools. If you just sort of assume that everything's okay, you may experience what I went through when my kids graduated from college, local Portland State College.
Okay. Oh.
And I realized that I had actually lost the heart and soul of my kids to some extent.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That they had become very clearly a part of a system that was nothing like the family unity that they came from.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that. It's very frustrating.
We're all in this incredible world trying to work it out. And we have to become aware that there are forces out there that are not looking out for our best interests, either as family units or as social, socially connected, loving individuals.
Exactly.
There are some big money interests that are sort of behind the scenes messing with things. And so this is a great opportunity for you to become aware.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Dr. Paul, thanks for watching the show. Please visit doctorsandscience.com. There you can access our members-only section. This show is member-supported. We don't have to take sponsors. We don't have to have anybody controlling the content of our show. This is a huge perk most people aren't aware of. Your membership gives you access to my ebooks, transcripts of every show, PowerPoints from talks I'm giving around the country, and live bonus peeks at behind-the-scenes work we're doing, my off-the-cuff thoughts and reviews on current events. Your support makes all this possible. Thank you. Help me spread the truth and share this on social media and with your friends at doctorsandscience.com. I look forward to running with you against the wind. Go to our website, doctorsandscience.com, sign up, donate if you can, and let's make this the weekly show the nation's been waiting for. I'm Dr. Paul.